This is Food for Thought. Call Carol at 866-823-1077. And now, it's Food for Thought.
Good afternoon and welcome to Food for Thought with Carol. And joining me today is Tracy Gregoire. It is Tuesday today, and it kind of looks like it's not so nice out right now. Is it, Tracy?
A bit cloudy.
Yeah, because it seemed a little nicer this morning when I left, but I can always tell. We don't have really windows right down where we are, but you can tell by the light in the building. You know?
And I think it's supposed to pour later. I heard heavy rain.
I think later tonight and all into tomorrow.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I think that's what I heard. But listeners, you are listening to The Pulse 107.7. You can also stream us live on the World Wide Web at WTPLFM.com. It is powered by the Granite State Dairy Promotion. And here we are.
Another day.
Another day. So very shortly, I'm very excited about our first guest today. We'll be joined with Rich. I'm not going to maybe attempt to say his last name. I'm not sure.
Try it. Tango Lowy.
Oh, okay.
Tango Lowy.
Richard Tango Lowy. He is the owner of Dancing Lion Chocolates over here on Elm Street. And it is quite the place.
If you have not been into Dancing Lion Chocolate, you need to go check it out. It is amazing. It's not like your typical chocolate place at all. It is an experience, and it's beautiful.
Yeah, gorgeous. And I know Steve Freeman has talked about it a couple of times, and so I'm very anxious to chat with him. And then at the top of the second hour, we'll be joined with my son Tyler and his girlfriend Allie Nault, Miss America's Outstanding Teen. We'll be talking to them about their little dining adventures.
That's always fun.
Yes. And then, of course, we'll be joined with, I don't think it's Julie today. I believe she's sending in Holly and Nikki today.
Okay.
From Make-A-Wish, New Hampshire. So we have a packed show, as usual. So what did you do last night?
What did I do last night? No. Apparently, since I can't remember.
You know what we did? Well, we stayed at home, we cooked, and we studied for our scuba diving final tonight.
Wow. Where do you do that?
I am so nervous about it because it's hard. It's hard. We do that over at Diver's Den.
Okay.
Over here in Manchester.
Yeah. They've been there forever.
They've been there forever. And do you know that they are the oldest dive shop in the world?
I did not know that.
Isn't that an exciting statistic?
It is.
I think that's so cool.
It's such a strange location. You wouldn't think here in Manchester, New Hampshire.
I know.
Would be the oldest dive shop in the world.
It is. They're dive shop number 08. And our instructor was telling us, because you have to fill out, you know, for Patty, you have to fill out certain forms and stuff like that. And then they submit it and all that. And you have to put in the store number. And Seth, our instructor, just said, you know, just a little trivia with that. 07, number 07, went out of business a year or two ago in northern New York or something. And so they were the oldest, and now they are the oldest in the world. And he says, just to give you an idea, because he lives in Cayman half the year, Cayman and a couple other dive places.
Must be nice.
I know, right? And he said that, like, where he's worked, it's like, you know, in four digits, 8843 or, you know, something. So just to give you an idea of, you know, how many are out there. So they're the oldest in the world.
That is
neat. That was kind of cool. Manchester, New
Hampshire. When I was in the Marine Corps, I got advanced PADI certified.
Really?
So in Okinawa, Japan, that's where I got certified. Beautiful diving there. And then when I was stationed in Hawaii, we would go night diving.
Oh.
So in Hawaii, there's no, the lobsters don't have claws. So there was this really cool thing. So I was stationed in Kaneohe Bay, and it was like a basin or like a bowl where the water kind of fills in, and you jump in, and then as the, you know, as the wave goes out, it takes you out. So that's the only way to get in and out where we went. So we would jump into this, as the wave would come, we'd jump into this little bowl, then it would take you out, and then we would go night diving and catch lobster. And then just catching them with your bare hand. And then,
oh my goodness.
Then we would go back to my barracks room because I was, you know, living in the barracks, and I had like a little hot plate, and I would cook lobster for my roommate and my boyfriend at the time, now my husband, and we would have lobster right there in our barracks that I caught with my bare hand.
How cool is that?
I actually forgot about that.
So have you dived recently?
I have not been Actually, the last time my husband and I went was in Turks and Caicos, which was before we had kids, and we had to have like a refresher course because it hadn't been too long. And we did go out and we saw sharks, and it was a little hairy, but it was fun. I loved it. But you know, it's been a long time. So that's before kids. It's been 14 years probably.
It's something that we talked about doing. You know, we go to Grand Cayman every Christmas, apparently, you know, tonight we're doing our final exam, and then we're also going in the pool at the Y, and you can do your, so after you do your you know, a couple things in the pool, then you have to do your out dives, and they're going and doing them at the lake. And I'm like, you dive in the lake? Like, really? Like, I just think that's so eerie. I just think that's like kind of eerie. And Seth said, well, didn't you guys say you were going to Cayman? And I said, yeah, we go, you know, Christmas time. He goes, well, I can set it all up for you. He says he thinks he's even going to be there, so he may even be the one to do it. He says, if I'm not there, I'll set you up with one of my really good friends. I know almost everybody on the island.
So you get to skip the lake.
So I can skip the lake. I'm so happy about skipping the lake, I can't even tell you. So we'll just do our final, you know, couple dives or whatever. I think it's actually four dives you have to do in the you know, in open water.
Yeah, that's what when I was in Okinawa, that's where I did mine. We would actually go out on a boat and do it with a group of people. It was so much fun.
Yeah.
I loved it.
So,
Well, good for you for doing that.
I'm nervous.
Yeah, your face is telling me that you're nervous.
I am nervous. I am. I did okay underwater. We went underwater last week in the pool, but it got really cold, so we ended up all getting out because it was just too cold. But, you know, I was fine underwater. It was kind of funny watching Daryl. He was kind of... It was funny.
Well, it is something. It's something about being out in the open water. Is a little. What happens if you're at all nervous? What happens is your heart starts pounding a little bit, and then you're thinking about all the things that might happen, and then you're breathing heavier, so then you're using more of your oxygen, and so it's it's definitely different to be out there, but you'll be fine.
Well, it's the final exam that I'm worried about. We were studying yesterday, and I'm like, I don't remember this. Like, bar this and PSI and this and that.
I wouldn't remember any of that. I'd have to start from scratch. It's been too many years.
I'm too old. I don't know.
Never too old, Carol. Never too old.
Well, we'll see if I pass tonight.
So. Okay. Anyway. We look forward to hearing.
Yeah. But today's food holiday. Did you see what today's food holiday was?
I did not. I always wait for you to surprise me.
It is National Coffee Day. You must have heard it a little bit because places you can get
I don't buy coffee today for free.
I did have an iced coffee this morning. That's pretty rare, but I generally don't drink coffee either. Mm. So
a lot of places are offering it for free today.
They are. And I should have done a little bit more research, but Jeannie came down and visited with us, so I didn't quite finish my research.
It was so nice to see Jeannie again.
It was very nice to see Jeannie. She's such a nice lady. I love her.
Yes.
I believe that Dunkin' Donuts was doing something, and you know, listeners, I'm sure you can, you know, check in with Dunkin' Donuts or whatever.
They were for the dark roast, I think.
For medium dark roast, yes.
I did see that, but I didn't know it was because of National Coffee Day.
Yes, and just a few statistics on coffee, which I kind of thought was a little interesting. It's been estimated that about 1/3 of the tap water used for drinking in North America is used to brew coffee. So 1/3 of the water. That's quite a bit.
Yeah, it is.
Hills Brothers ground vacuum-packed coffee was first introduced in 1900.
Wow.
That's kind of cool. And the coffee filter was invented in 1908 by a German homemaker, Melita Benz, when she lined a tin cup with blotted paper to filter the coffee grinds.
I think I've done that before when the filter breaks for
my
husband. Yeah,
probably,
And I've pour it over a little paper towel.
Exactly. Brilliant. Look at that. I wonder if she was around to collect all her earnings from that.
Probably not.
Probably not is right, I know.
So thank a couple sponsors.
Yes, go right ahead.
So for Casey's Rib Shack, famous hickory smoked award-winning Southern Pit Barbecue, 837 2nd Street in Manchester, and online at ribshack.net. And one of our newest sponsors, Star Dental, at 50 South Main Street in Manchester. They are at www.stardentalmanchester.com. So go check them out. I've been in that place. It is like a spa.
Really?
It is. You would never expect it from the outside.
A dental place?
It is like no dental office you have ever been in.
Wow.
You walk in, so the outside is just a regular like strip mall. So it doesn't look fancy. It's next to Subway.
I go by it every day.
Yeah. So it does not look like anything special.
Right.
I know that. But when you walk in, from the moment you walk into the door till walking through, they have a gorgeous lounge in between all of the exam rooms with music going and beautiful sofas. I assure you, it is like no other dental office I've ever seen. Maybe there's one out there, but I haven't seen it.
I don't really care for dental offices.
Well, wouldn't it be nice if
you
could...
I mean, I go every 6 months, but, you know, I don't care for them.
Well, so would it be nice if you were eased in a relaxing atmosphere?
Yes, it would be nice. If they knock me out, it would be better. You know, I'm the biggest baby when I go to the dentist. It's the shot I don't like. But, you know, you get yourself so riled up about it, and then when they do it, it's like, that's it. That's it. Like, you know, it ends up being okay. But
that's something that has never bothered me.
Oh, no, I don't like it.
No, nobody really likes getting a needle in their gum, but you're like, exactly, it doesn't hurt. It's like a pinch, and then you're fine.
I know.
I'm probably one of the few people in the world who's not been, I don't care about going to the dentist. They can do whatever. Actually, another little quick Tracy story. You know, I was in the Marine Corps. In boot camp, I had to have a root canal, like a emergency root canal in boot camp. Now in boot camp.
Did they have Novocaine in boot camp?
No, I'm kidding. So in boot camp, if you're not familiar, especially in the Marine Corps boot camp, you are pretty much sleep deprived, especially early on. They like to make sure that you're sleep deprived and, you know, are just exhausted all the time. So I go to get my root canal and I fell asleep during the procedure. I did a big dam in my mouth, holding my mouth open, and I actually fell asleep during a root canal. They didn't have to put me out. I did it on my own.
Oh, my goodness.
That's how relaxed I was and exhausted.
That's crazy. Well, I think we're going to go on break.
Okay.
Our first guest is in studio. We'll be joined with Richard Tango Lowy of Dancing Lion Chocolates right over here in Manchester, right on Elm Street. And I can't wait to hear what he has to say. I'm
Me
very
too.
Excited about talking to him. So you are listening to Food for Thought, 107.7 The Pulse. We'll be right back.
Food for Thought returns after these messages on 107.7 The Pulse.
You are listening to The Pulse, Food for Thought with Carol, and joining me is Tracy Gregoire.
Hello.
We are live at the Beacon Building at 814 Elm Street, right in downtown Manchester. You can come on down, have some lunch, and you can watch the show. And let's go right into our next guest, our first guest today. I want to welcome Richard Tango Lowy of Dancing Lion Chocolates. I should say the world famous Dancing Lion Chocolates.
Yes.
I mean, when you hear people talk about Dancing Lion Chocolates, and Steve Freeman, too. Do you know Steve Freeman? He has a lot to do with the Manchester Food Co-op.
Oh, yes, I know Steve.
He's awesome. He does a weekly segment. Weekly? Every week?
Yes. We're quad monthly.
Just kidding.
So I'd like to read a quote.
Monthly.
I'm totally kidding. I would like to read a quote from the Dancing Lion website that is from Rich, just to introduce him. Chocolate is my passion. I will never master her. Who can master one so willful and tempestuous? But I will continue to woo her and to craft a small bit of her soul into each truffle and bonbon I create. For chocolate is art, and as art, she is magnificent. That says it all, I think.
It definitely does.
So what does it say
welcome,
to you?
Rich. It says that you are passionate about what you do and that you put every ounce of your being into your creations, and it's not just chocolate. Like so many people, I think, just think of chocolate as chocolate, and it's so much more than that to you. That's what I take. Am I wrong? Am I off base?
Well, there is no off base. It's what it means to you. To me, it means chocolate is really, really, really hard to do, as it turns out. I had no idea when I started.
Now, when did you start? Did you start in 1995? Because I was reading
about
also,
that.
I first encountered the true soul of chocolate in 1995, and I wanted you to explain that to me.
What had happened is many, many, many years ago, decades now, I had tried to make chocolate truffles from chocolate chips. I just, you know, was a hobbyist, and it didn't work. And I had to learn why it didn't work. And that was, of course, before the days of the World Wide Web. It was a little trickier back then. And what I found is there isn't any chocolate in chocolate chips, at least not enough to speak of. Especially the parts that matter. And it took me a while to find that out and then to find real, what we call couverture chocolate, real working chocolate. And it was an entire revelation, just changed my view of everything. And that would have been about the 1995 point where everything changed.
Now, what did you do before that? Were you, did you always work in chocolate or tell me your story? How did that all come about?
In the 80s, I was a physicist in California. I actually worked at TRW's Space and Technology Group. We did superconductive electronics and electro-optics.
And that means nothing to me.
And it was a lot of fun. We lived in like moles in deep laboratories and just did cool things. It was
so you went from a physicist to a chocolatier.
Physicist, and you know what had happened is really the pure research and development part of science in the United States, it sort of was sort of going away about then, and we were one of the last. And I sort of saw it coming and shifted out to into the very, very new computer field for a while, and was there until like I kind of made my way out of that and became a full-time chocolatier, so for many years. But once a physicist, always a physicist. It doesn't go away.
Well, and I think that being a chocolatier is somewhat like a physicist.
I was just going to say the same thing. I was going to ask the same thing. Is it true?
May I say one really, really difficult thing here?
Yes.
Chocolate is a six-phase polymorphic crystal.
That's very unusual. Yes, then.
Okay, yeah. it's more like steel than it's like anything else, and it's a very unusual creature. We've, over the past few years, been doing some work with material science professors up at Dartmouth on studies of low-temperature work with cocoa butter and chocolate, because it's very unusual. So that's a yes.
Wow. For those of us who aren't scientifically minded.
I use my science every day in how we work with chocolate. Mm. It's unavoidable, I think.
So it's not a far stretch from what you were doing.
Not at all.
It's just a much tastier thing than you were doing before.
Many of the things I worked with when I was a young and in the science lab would have killed us. So.
Yeah. Yeah. So you don't want to eat those.
Yeah.
Now, tell me, how did Dancing Lion come about? Because Dancing Lion is not like your typical chocolate, place that you would go to get some chocolate. It's not typical. So tell me how that came about and what makes you different.
Okay. If we continue from the story before.
Okay.
After I discovered real chocolate, I spent about 10 years just finding all of it I could and also learning how to work with it. And as it turns out, to buy what we call a tempering machine and make pretty decent chocolate is pretty easy, but to really understand chocolate and do amazing things with it is not easy at all. So I spent 10 very frustrating years, many of them sleepless nights, when I would try to work with a chocolate, it just wouldn't do what I want and I couldn't figure out why. And it actually was quite a few years before I really understood that there was a lot of science behind it and I could bring that back in. Once I found the phase diagrams for chocolate and started understanding what it was really doing, it became not easy, but quite a bit easier for me. And then somewhere around 2007, I started just using a borrowed kitchen and making chocolate for events and things. It was getting good enough so we could do that. And then a little bit later on, had the opportunity to create a kitchen in the basement of the Franco-American Center in downtown Manchester.
Right next to the Red Arrow.
Right next to the Red Arrow. They had a rec kitchen. It was completely run down. It had been used for storage. I offered him $75 a month and brought in the health inspector, and we went and rebuilt the place and made a kitchen.
Wow.
And that actually went very well. It's open by appointment, like twice a week or twice a month, bi-monthly. Yeah. And and it was great. And then the Franco-American Center moved out, leased the place out to NHIA, and they wanted the space, so I had to decide what I was going to do. So I had the good fortune to have the opportunity to buy what was then Lee's Spot Bookstore in the middle of downtown. Now, Lee was retiring after 80 years. He was willing to sell me the place. And we turned the place into Dancing Lion Chocolate. We did a full renovation, and it's been great. It's been great. Manchester's been good. I had no idea when we opened what we were doing in Manchester, whether it would work or not.
And you know, that is like so scary because you are not like a typical chocolate place. Mm-hmm. You know, it's definitely different when you go in there.
It is.
You know, I mean, your chocolate is really art.
And when you're doing something new like that, oh gosh, Rich is pouring this looks decadent chocolate. I don't even know what it's like. It's liquid chocolate.
This is drinking chocolate.
Drinking chocolate into these gorgeous
Steve Freeman told me about this.
Now, ideally, this should be frothy, but I don't have everything here to froth it without making a horrible mess of your beautiful space.
So do you just drink it?
You like do. Now, this kind of talks about a little bit about why we're a bit different.
Oh, my.
Oh, and it's
we make
warm.
Our drinking chocolate the way it's been made for about 3,000 years.
Now, is this how you serve it?
This is how we in bowls. Usually frothier, but in bowls.
Yeah.
Go ahead and take a sip.
Oh, my.
Now, what's special about this...
There's a lot of different flavors still coming.
Because it's about the chocolate. If you go back to when cacao, the bean chocolate was made from, was traded up into the region around Guatemala maybe about 3,000 years ago, people learned that they could ferment and dry the beans and grind them and then mix them with water and whatever spices they had, and they would make this really frothy, wonderful drink. It didn't have any sugar in it. It had no dairy in it. By the way, what you're drinking doesn't have any dairy in it.
You would never guess.
This is just chocolate, water, and spices.
Wow.
So good.
And they got it became very, very important to the culture for thousands of years. When the Spanish came into Central and South America, cacao and chocolate was a big deal. They brought huge amounts back and introduced drinking chocolate or hot chocolate into Europe, thickened, more cream and milk, sugar.
Right.
But it was the basic idea that had been developed for thousands of years in Mesoamerica. Very few places that I know of make chocolate in the old way with water. And you would traditionally serve it in a gourd or a bowl, so we serve it that way. I love it because it really shows off the flavor of the chocolates you're working with. This is a blend of two different chocolates. This is a Nicaraguan 80% that we're helping redevelop. That region hasn't exported for the most part since the Spanish left in the 1700s. And a Ghana, which is very nice and fudgy and gives it a good base. The Nicaraguan is a very light aromatic bean, and it gets a very different flavor. We treat, in a lot of ways, cacao is a lot like wine. But different beans have very, very different flavor profiles when you're dealing with really good chocolate.
And it's very creamy, and I do taste the spices. Like, I don't know, what are the kind of spices that are in there?
This is a blend of a couple of chilies and a little bit of really good cinnamon.
It's very subtle, but it's definitely there.
We typically do two flavors. We have one which is a little edgier than this and has more spice, and that's our Mayan Heat, and our Creamy Dark, which is a little softer and rounder. I blended them for us today, just we have something in the middle.
And it's very creamy without having any dairy in it. So that's
amazing.
The cacao bean itself is creamy like that, makes it creamy like that?
A cacao bean, which is about 3/4 of an inch, half an inch long. It looks like a bean of some sort, but it's about half fat. All you need to do to make chocolate is grind the beans. They have enough fat in them to actually create the chocolate paste, which is chocolate as we know it. If you add sugar, you're just making sweetened chocolate. The old beans from Central and South America had a tendency to not generally be bitter. Bitterness came in later as beans were brought into Africa and Brazil and developed some different genetics. But the oldest beans have a tendency to be intense, but not bitter, even if you're having eat the beans plain. So, and you can make the drinking chocolate even without sugar. This has a little bit of sugar, not a lot. You don't get any bitterness.
Mm-hmm. And it's not sweet. It's not sweet, but it's not sweet. That's what I'm trying to say. I didn't know how to say that because you have like 100% or 80 or 90 or whatever percent, like a regular chocolate bar that you go and buy, and it's dark chocolate. It's like you say, it's bitter sometimes. It doesn't have a lot of sweet, so it's. It's a fine. Some people love that, and some people don't. But with this, it's like it's not sweet, but it's lovely. It's very enjoyable. Good. Yeah,
very much so.
It's hard to explain, but I love it.
So how did now? Okay, so we have this drinking chocolate, and how have people, how do people like this? How have they responded to this?
We sell a lot of drinking chocolate. Even during the summer, this was our first year, we actually sold more in Vols Hot over the heat of summer than over ice. We sold over ice as well. Every year before, we sold a lot over ice, but this year, people really just wanted it hot in Vols no matter what. And we sell a lot of drinking chocolate.
So people just come in out throughout the day, all day long, and get their drinking chocolate?
Yep, and they get their drinking chocolate. They'll sit and relax. You know, we're very much... Yeah, you've been in a...
It's beautiful, very relaxing place, and nice environment.
It's a very comfortable place. It's really sort of modeled off of any chocolate shop in Paris, which has some elegance to it. Any restaurant in Guatemala, which is just a place you want to go and just sit all day. Mm-hmm. And then I wanted Manchester, so we really tried to make the place reflect all of that.
So for people out there that have not walked into Dancing Chocolate, Dancing Lion Chocolates, walk us through the front door and you know, give us an idea of, you know, what we may see.
Oh, the first trick is finding us.
I was just going to say that. Let me interrupt and say, first you're going to walk past it, and then you're going to come back and you're going to walk past it again. It's kind of tricky to find. It's not tricky to find. It's a very small front.
We're 12 feet wide. We are right in the middle of Manchester, across from where Ted Herbert's music was, the Red Awning. If you cross that crosswalk, you actually come into our front door. But everything is sort of chocolate covered. I mean, even we have a big, beautiful metal chalkboard sign welded with our logo on it. Gorgeous. First Sign did it for us. And people walk right by that without even seeing it.
Yep.
It's just gorgeous. But we're 12 feet wide. We are right in the middle of downtown. We have what's now Function, two doors on one side. We've got Chasquin, two doors on the other side. We're pretty much across from City Hall. But we're open almost every day. We're closed on Mondays, but most other days we're open all the time.
So Tuesday through Sunday?
Tuesday through Sunday. Tuesday through Friday, we're 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. On Saturday, we are 11 to 7, and on Sunday, we're 10 to 4.
Very nice. And then do you, is there seating inside?
Yes, we have six tables.
Okay.
You know, five to six. It varies with what we need.
Did you have tables when you first started?
We had like three.
Okay.
We had a few.
I went in when you very first opened, and I don't remember seeing that many tables. Okay.
It's changed a lot.
Okay. I gotta get my butt over there.
But one thing that's coming up that's unusual for us is, and we won't be doing this much longer, over the past 3 or 4 years, we've done 1 to 2 really nice chef-tasting dinners in our shop a year. And we'll be hosting the last two of those. We make them entirely at the shop. Everything has chocolate in it.
Including the plates.
We've made the plates out of chocolate before. My goal is, when we do these, to surprise and delight the guests. So everything has to be gorgeous. And a little bit like when they went through the door in the first Willy Wonka and opened into the magic room. I kind of want that with every course. And we aim to do that.
For sure. So when are those? Did you have
the
some
next
coming
one
up?
Is actually on the 18th of October, and I've got just two or three tables. We do two seatings of six tables each. We have live music. I have a few seats for that, and we have a few seats left for our Valentine's, which is the Sunday after Valentine's. And we actually hadn't planned to schedule that yet, but customers started giving us money and saying, "Let us know when it will be." So we figured we better pick a date and commit to actually make doing it. This year. We have pictures on our website if you search for the dinners. We've done pretty crazy things. And that's what we want to give some people something that's entirely unexpected. It's more like almost somewhere between a dinner and kind of a show. The menu is a surprise. We spend about 3 to 4 months designing the menu. It gets storyboarded. Each course is preceded by a little card that's sort of a hint about what's coming, usually in verse. And then Savory Chef Jeff and I will come out and discuss how we constructed the course.
Savory Chef Jeff.
Yep. Chef Jeff had been with me for about 4 years. He actually has just gone back to his first chef, which was Matt Preventure at the Foundry.
Yeah.
Matt came back.
I
he went
Matt.
Back. And, Jeff came from Matt before Matt left.
Okay.
And has gone back to Matt now that he wanted to be in a real restaurant. And we only cook a few times a year. But so we'll be doing these last two dinners. But we talk, you know, we explain what the course is and how we constructed it, and people enjoy, and then we go on to the next. And it's about seven courses.
Very nice.
We make everything, you know, ourselves.
So why don't you let people know, we're going to go on a short break. Before we go to break, let people know where they can look that up.
And if you go to www.dancinglionchocolate.com.
Perfect.
You'll find information
and
about
everything. They can find information about that. And we are you're listening to The Pulse. We are in studio with Richard Tango Lowy of the world-famous Dancing Lion Chocolates. And we're drinking sipping chocolate. And it's amazing. It's amazing. Steve
Mine
Freeman's been telling me about it, and I'm so excited that you brought it. So stay tuned. Food for Thought will be right back.
Food for Thought returns after these messages on 107.7 The Pulse.
Welcome back. Food for Thought with Carol, and joining me is Tracy Gregoire. We are in studio with the owner of Dancing Lion Chocolates right over here on Elm Street, 917 Elm Street. You can check him out on the web at dancinglionchocolates.com. He has a sounds like this amazing event coming up, October 18th. You can check out all the details on his website. And, you know, Tracy and I are, we're like getting so spoiled, it's not even funny. I mean, we get food because we are a food show, but not like this.
Yeah. I'm thinking he should just come on every day.
No, he can't. I'm sorry.
But I make chocolate.
Okay.
He can't.
I guess.
So now, I mean, these are like a work of art, really. I mean, talk to me about that.
Our byline is chocolate as art. I really believe that you eat with your eyes first, and something should be beautiful. That actually affects that. Studies have shown that it affects the flavor. What you see affects what you taste. Mm-hmm. We go to some extremes. You know, we have our bonbons are beautiful. We also paint. We have an artist who paints on our bars, and if you can see those on our website frequently. But they're magnificent. They're actually full works of arts painted in colored cocoa butter.
I've seen them. They're gorgeous. And just as simple as this piece that I'm holding in my hand that I'm about to taste is shimmering in gold.
Yes.
The whole thing is, it looks like...
Mine is blue.
Pixie dust or something. But in gold. It's beautiful. Yeah, and then we each have a little blue piece.
Now, is it actually painted on, Rich?
The color is actually mica. And it's a tinted mica. It's actually, the colors we use are halal and kosher and everything else. But it's a very fine dust that we can get different effects whether we brush them in the mold, whether we mix them with alcohol first, whether we brush them on afterwards. Sometimes we'll airbrush colored cocoa butters. We'll use things like matcha tea if I want a pale green, various. Because it's art, we can play all the time, and we can experiment with what something is going to look like and how it's going to, you know, what the feel of a piece is going to be.
So, I mean, you know, I own restaurants. So, I mean, I'm thinking of food costs. I'm thinking of labor. I'm thinking, you know, how long does it take for them to make one of these?
It depends on what it is. And I'll tell you, many of our products are not terribly expensive. Our chocolates tend to be on the more expensive side for several reasons. One is the labor. Because if we're making 200 of a piece and it's a piece of art and we're crafting what the look is and what the flavor profile is going to be, often just building up layers of flavor as we're starting with a chocolate and then playing with something else, like maybe a Texas tarragon, and then what's the right chocolate for that, and then what other elements might bring in some beauty or the right aftertaste for that. It's really building up flavors as art. And then what's the look of a piece like that going to be? How should the person who's going to enjoy it, how should they perceive it before they put it in their mouth? And then that also goes to the shape of a piece impacts how it develops in your mouth. A very hard-tempered, very crisp, molded rectangular piece, like the mahjong tile that you just ate. I think it's gone now.
The banana one?
The banana maple.
That was amazing, by the way.
Your mouth has to get through that chocolate first. So the soft center that we build up is going to develop more slowly. So the chocolate I choose to go on the outside will have a special impact. If I go with a truffle that's a paper-thin shell on top of a ganache, a cream and chocolate emulsion, it's very silky, it's going to explode all at once. So we really have to choose the form to deliver the flavors we want, how the flavor is going to unfold. So there's a lot that goes in.
Wow.
So chocolate for me is definitely art. When we make truffles and bonbons, it's a fair amount of work, and it can take time. And that goes in. When we price a piece, we start with the chocolate and the ingredients, and we look at the level of artistry that's in that piece of chocolate. Mm-hmm. And that goes into how a piece is priced. And they can be anywhere from $2.75 up to the skulls are 6.25. And we've done – it varies with what we're making.
Right. Oh, my.
So we have two more pieces in front of us.
I know. I just had the blue one.
Okay. All right. Then
first,
I'm going to try the blue one.
I want you to tell me about what each of you ate, the bonbon.
Oh, before. So the the banana maple.
Banana maple and the Mahjong tiles.
It was amazing. It was it, just like you said, it was like that crisp, hard, like thicker, hard shell. And then the creamy banana. Is that where the banana and maple flavor is? It was, yeah, it was probably one of the easily, actually, probably the best, the beast. I'm not going to say probably. The best piece of chocolate I've ever had so far. So that was pretty good. I want to go get some more of those. But they're only for, one is only for a limited amount of time. So I have to go get them now.
Yeah, there are about 12 more of those.
Okay.
Ah, there you go. He's letting you
know. I have to walk down the street afterwards.
I had the habanero pecan caramel. Delicious. And, you know, I was afraid it was going to be too hot. Or, you know, when you say habanero, people kind of go, what? But it had a nice subtle, you could still taste it, but yet, you know, it wasn't
Spicy
harsh at all. No, not at all. It was delicious. It was delicious. I mean, I've never, you know, I never sat and really examined, you know, you usually take chocolate for granted.
Yes.
Unfortunately.
You just pop it in your mouth and eat it.
But you don't do that here at Dancing Lion. I mean, you know, like you said, it's art and we're talking and we're, you know, learning so many, you know, I don't think I'll eat chocolate. Oh, I was just going to say drink chocolate, but that is appropriate. The same way ever, really. You know, it's very good. Very, very good.
Well, I'm glad to hear that. That's what we aim for, people to eat mindfully.
Fast
we didn't get to chase the rest of our chocolate.
Well,
can we come back and do that?
I'm eating it.
We got to talk about it.
I'm eating it.
Can we come back and do that?
I don't think we're going to have time.
All right, we're going to taste it and come
eat
back
your chocolate
and tell
you. And then we'll say goodbye.
Okay.
See, it goes so fast when you're eating.
It does. It time goes very, very fast. Rich, I want to thank you so much. Dancing Lion Chocolates. Listeners, get out there. DancingLionChocolates.com. They're right over on Elm Street, 917 Elm Street. Check them out. We're at the top of the hour. We'll be right back.